In the future, we might use Bitcoin to buy our groceries. Monolithic giants like Apple and Facebook could be replaced by digital systems that are owned and controlled by crowds of ordinary people scattered all over the world. But is it really likely to happen? And why is Switzerland so sweet on cryptocurrencies and blockchain? I'm Susan Masika. Today on The Swiss Connection, I'm joined by my colleague Matt Allen, Swiss Info's financial correspondent. Matt's been knee-deep in this tantalizing scene for several years now. As he was telling me, he knows his hash rates from his hackers. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Susan.
So, Matt, since we said we were going to talk about cryptocurrency, I've been taking various clippings out of the Financial Times. We've got, it seems like every edition, nearly every other page has some sort of a cryptocurrency story. We've got here, Bitcoin's design tarnishes its value as money. And we've got cryptocurrency holders take on central banks at their peril. I'm sure you could also name a bunch of headlines you've seen lately.
Well, sure. It's never a dull day in crypto land. There's headlines all over the place. And if you look on social media, then you'll get an awful lot more interest coming out of it. And this is all to do with the origins of Bitcoin, its shady origins with the shady character Satoshi Nakamoto, and no one knows who he, she, or they is. The very fact that it was born as a sort of rebellious spirit to replace the nasty banks and the controlling central banks and free us all from the tyranny of the financial sector. The very fact that in the beginning it was used a lot for nefarious activities, such as a website called Silk Road, which sold drugs and all sorts of other nasty things. There's been police stories and everything. But more recently, we've seen Bitcoin hit the headlines again because it's increased in value. The amount of money, dollars, you can extract out of Bitcoin by selling it has just risen enormously over the last year or so. I mean, at the beginning of 2020, a Bitcoin would have cost you about $5,000, and then roll on to April this year, and it was up to $60,000. And then all of a sudden, it fell off a cliff and was now worth about $30,000. So people are getting into Bitcoin for speculation. It's a bit of casino investing. These are just normal people off the streets who think they can make a fortune, and it captures the public imagination. All these things put together make Bitcoin great news.
And speaking of news, I was reading recently, it's not just private people who want to get in on it, but nations. El Salvador is thinking of adopting cryptocurrency as a national currency, right?
It's true, yes. El Salvador wants to make Bitcoin its national currency, which means that all the shops and merchants must accept it. Now, this is because a lot of people from El Salvador live and work abroad, and they send remittances back home to their families. And that's quite a tricky thing to do with the financial system at the moment. It costs a lot of money, takes a lot of time. Now, Bitcoin, because it's borderless, it knows no national borders. It's not owned by any country. It just lives in the cybersphere. It can be transmitted from one person to another, pretty much like sending an SMS. And so it's seen as a really useful thing for countries like El Salvador. And I hear, incidentally, that Paraguay is also thinking of going down this route. But it's not as cut and dried as that. Again, Bitcoin divides opinion all the time. And countries like China and India are trying to crack down on cryptocurrencies. Switzerland takes a sort of a middle neutral path, if you like. It's quite happy for Bitcoin to be around as long as it behaves itself.
Well, and not only that, I mean, lately the legislators have actually gone out of their way to pave the way to make it easier for cryptocurrency and the technology it needs to work, right?
Yeah, this is because we're not just talking about Bitcoin. If it was just Bitcoin, we're talking about the parliaments across the road here wouldn't have bothered passing national laws to reform the company laws, the financial laws in pretty much record time. last year, and they're coming into effect as we speak. But it's because Bitcoin is part of a bigger picture. The technology that underpins, that powers Bitcoin, is called blockchain. It's a computer system, really. Nothing more than a computer, a digital bookkeeping system. It simply tells us which assets belong to which people at any particular time. But it does so in a way that allows the network of users to collaborate amongst each other, to validate all the transactions and update the books by themselves. So the network owns the blockchain, and it maintains the blockchain, and it controls the blockchain, rather than relying on banks and lawyers and accountants and all the other people who hold things up and charge you money. And it also gives you more direct control over your assets. Now, this opens up the path for many business opportunities. Anytime a group of people have a mutual interest in the same data, and every time that group of people has no reason to trust one another because they don't know each other, they're spread all over the world, you put those two things together, then the blockchain design solves that problem and allows people to get together and mutually control the system and control the data without all the roadblocks of waiting for outside referees and auditors to do it for them. Now, that opens up opportunities in areas like logistics, in voting, perhaps even charity work, NGOs. And so this is why the Swiss government and the Swiss parliament has been very keen to help blockchain get established in Switzerland. Switzerland has been a pioneer in setting new laws and new frameworks to allow this new sort of business opportunities to emerge.
But going back to the really fluctuating value of Bitcoin, I mean, how practical is this currency going to be for the average person? I suppose you probably have to talk to somebody who's not the average person, but rather someone who's a real enthusiast, right?
Well, the wild price increases and dips in Bitcoin obviously make it unrealistic at the moment to use as a currency. You never know how many goods you can buy or how much your money's going to be worth at any particular time. But it's more than just that. It's a concept, a philosophy of freedom. And the early adopters, the real enthusiasts, they called themselves Bitcoin maximalists because they really believe in the technology freeing society. One of these people in Switzerland was a guy called Alexis Roussel, and he got into it really, really early, and he even founded a company in Switzerland called Bitty, which helps people buy cryptocurrency. And so I spoke to him about what Bitcoin means to him.
For me, Bitcoin represents everything we cherish as a free digital human being. So it gives a glimpse of a society where we can have a digital society, which is made out of free human beings. Until now, people have gone into a common understanding that, without Google, Apple, Microsoft, or Facebook, whatever, you can't do much. Basically, you're sold to them, and that's it. But there is an alternative, and now the alternative is a real economy where you can build businesses and you can make money and maybe even redefine how identities are working.
Well, now today there are thousands of people making a living in the Swiss blockchain sector. We've got over 5,000 people who are working for nearly 1,000 companies that are based both in Switzerland and neighboring Liechtenstein.
So it all started in about 2013 with the creation of Crypto Valley. But in about 2017, the price of Bitcoin exploded. And this encouraged people to get more and more into cryptocurrencies and start their own businesses and projects. And they all started gravitating towards Switzerland, towards Crypto Valley. It was pretty extraordinary in those early days. There were people coming from all over the place in great numbers. And one of the guys who was dealing with this was Matthias Ruch. who was co-founder of the blockchain incubator startup CVVC. And I spoke to him. He told me just how crazy things were in those days.
Over the course of time into 2017, we had some 200 requests per week of projects from all over the world that want to set up shop, get funding, get advice, need connections to lawyers and everything. What was really exciting is the creativity that you could see, the entrepreneurial mindset of the people coming to Switzerland. Everything was possible. It was very global. People were building new worlds, were reinventing the financial system. At least that was what they were promising.
So is Crypto Valley still jumping as much as it was back then?
Well, no, it's not quite as wild and wacky as it was back in those days. It had quite a sort of a Wild West feel, and there was several failures of these startups and a little bit of fraud and scams going on, and we didn't like that. But what happened after 2017 is the price of Bitcoin crashed. From the end of 2017 into the early 2018, it went right down into the basement. And they actually call that period the crypto winter because things froze over. But that hasn't seen the death of Crypto Valley, not at all. In fact, it's still growing. But these days, with less sort of crazy projects, less projects that are doomed to fail, and it's a little bit more sustainable at the moment.
After the crypto winter, different kind of projects came into the space, also to Switzerland. You know, that was also the time when the nowadays regulated players in Switzerland, you know, were created, were founded, took off, were more sustainable. Regulations kicked in globally, which made the space much more resilient.
So now we see an example of how Bitcoin has moved from its shady days of the past to being something that's attracting the attention of national governments and regulators.
I don't think that you can actually stop the idea of blockchain or even Bitcoin, the idea of decentralization, of democratizing access to the financial world in the end. I think this is a big movement, but of course it's also a threat to existing legacy system. And these systems are very powerful. And I think we are in a transition period where we're trying to find out where's the place for each of these systems. I think both worlds are trying to find their places.
Well, the way he puts it, it sounds like there's no going back. And it shows how cryptocurrency has evolved in just over a decade. And I don't just mean from a tech perspective, but also from a reputational one, because initially it had a pretty shady connotation.
Well, of course, wherever there's money, wherever there's assets, there's going to be crime. You can't get away from it. And at the moment, Bitcoin seems to be the asset of choice for ransomware attackers who shut down huge companies like Kaseya and Colonial Pipeline and then demand Bitcoin as a ransom payment. Well, I chat about this quite a lot with a guy called Markus Mekler, who's a crypto crime specialist at Canton Zurich Police. And he investigates all sorts of crypto crime.
The most perfect asset, I would say, for criminals is still cash. Cash is still king. It's the most anonymous one. Bitcoin is a lot more traceable, of course, than cash. If you're dealing with cash, you have to usually take the cash across the border. And with Bitcoin, that's easy because there are no borders. I mean, as soon as you have Bitcoins in your wallet, the Bitcoins are basically everywhere where you can have an internet access and send transactions out. So it's harder to launder, but it's easier to get to the places where you want them to be laundered.
But at one point, a criminal may wish to cash that Bitcoin out into Swiss francs or whatever currency they need. Is this another sort of weak point in the sort of criminal system for those using cryptocurrencies?
You can buy stuff with Bitcoin, but it's hard to live off Bitcoin at the moment, and especially if you want to live the big life. So as you said, there will be a point, at least at the moment, where they have to cash out into traditional fiat money like US dollars or Swiss francs. And this junction, this breaking out of the blockchain system, that's a huge chance for police, because there you either have to find somebody who buys your Bitcoin, or you, what's usually done is they use some kind of service. And of course, the service at the service, they leave traces behind.
But cryptocurrencies aren't just about the big headline-grabbing crimes of ransomware attackers. Actually, it's turned into a crime aimed against the common people, a bit like the old Nigerian email scams of yesteryear. And lots of ordinary people on the street are now being hit by scammers. And Markus Mekler told me a few examples of how this works.
They want to make it seem special to you, so like you have been selected or something like that, or you're lucky to be. For example, they phone you and then they say, "Oh, I wanted to reach somebody else, basically, but now that I have you on the phone, maybe I can talk to you about this and that, and then make the people feel special." If the people do not realize that it's all fake, and then they start off small, like you give me 200 Swiss francs or 300 Swiss francs or 500 Swiss francs, and then they start to invest. They get big returns. They can also withdraw funds in the beginning. And then they go in more and more and more with higher amounts of money, like 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 Swiss francs, and even more, millions. And then comes the situation where they want to withdraw, and then it doesn't work anymore, of course. Then they go into the stuff deeper and deeper and deeper. They find ways to lure more money out of the people, like, "Yeah, we have a problem with the tax law of this and that country, and you're going to be punished if you do not pay another 50,000 Swiss francs in income tax," and things like that. And even later on, after the scam, they run companies or websites, I mean, not real companies, of course, fake companies, that claim to help you get your money back. And for that, they also extort you.
Well, it's scary to hear how these con men operate, but speaking of scary, what about the environmental impact of cryptocurrencies and blockchain tech? I've seen some stats that say that Bitcoin alone uses as much energy as small countries. And another figure I saw was that a single Bitcoin transaction sucks up as much energy as the average Swiss person in 46 days.
Well, digital currencies or any digital system are by their very nature going to consume a lot of computing power. And there's something about Bitcoin that worries people, though, and that's the way you create the Bitcoin. They're created by these entities called miners, who literally have around the world warehouses stacked full of computers whirring away, trying to crack mathematical puzzles so that they can win Bitcoin as a prize. And so what you have is these warehouses cranked full of hard drives whirring around, competing with each other to crack this puzzle so that they can win the Bitcoin. And it's a bit like a Formula One race. If you can imagine dozens of cars whizzing around the track, you only get one winner. And so people might say, "Well, look, I don't mind the winner consuming all that fuel, but those other 30 cars, what was the point of them?" And so this is why people are getting more and more cross with Bitcoin about its power consumption and about its environmental footprint. Now, the cryptocurrency scene, the people say they've taken this on board and they're turning more and more to alternative energy sources and that they're going to go green, but only time will tell if they manage to convince the doubters.
And do you know anything about how they want to go more green? Is there any concrete suggestions on what to do?
Well, they say that a lot of these Bitcoin miners have been using dirty power from old coal-fired power plants to run their computers. And now they're going to go and find hydropower or other ways of doing this. There are other ways of creating cryptocurrencies. It doesn't have to be this race. There can be ways of cutting down the number of computers that are whirring around to create these things. There are different systems, and so there are ways of reducing the environmental footprint. But it's just a question of, is the industry, is the sector that interested in it? Will it go down this route, and how fast?
And speaking of how fast, I mean, what is the future going to be? Do you think we're going to actually be paying for our coffee and our clothing with Bitcoin in 5 years or so?
Well, of course, it's always going to be difficult while the price of cryptocurrencies is moving around so crazily. But there are shops and merchants that do accept Bitcoin. In Switzerland, for example, the largest online retailer, Digitec Galaxus, accepts Bitcoin as payments. There are cantons like Canton Zug that will accept cryptocurrencies as tax payments. But I think what the most promising area is at the moment is not the currency, is not using cryptocurrencies as money, but it's all the other use cases that can come out of blockchain. And it can streamline functions, it can make transactions easier, it can make them cheaper. And it's even convinced the likes of the Swiss Stock Exchange to create a whole new stock exchange that deals with digital assets only. And so I think we could be on the verge of different business cases, different uses. But cryptocurrencies as money, well, it's possible, but I wouldn't see it happening for a few years yet. But Bitcoin enthusiast Alexis Roussel, who we heard earlier had created the Bitty cryptocurrency trading platform, certainly disagrees with me.
And at one point, what will happen is exactly with the same thing that happened with cell phones or the internet, is we will just wake up in a few years and we will find out that the inversion of the infrastructure, meaning that every service, every financial service that we are using are basically built on top of Bitcoin somehow, that will just happen. We will just realize that, and we won't recognize like how we came there. No, it's the same in the year 2000 or 2005, let's say. Suddenly we woke up and everyone had the smartphone. Where did it came from, you know? And actually, there was a whole adoption phase, which was using the network effect. And once the network effect kicks in, then it's so rapid that you don't realize it.
Oh, well, it's a lot of twists and turns in this whole cryptocurrency blockchain scene. How are we going to keep up with this?
Well, I certainly don't blame people for getting confused. It's hardly a day goes by without something crazy happening. But it just so happens that I keep up with all this, and I write a newsletter every 2 weeks which explains what's going on in the Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency and the blockchain scene. And it also takes a wider look at the whole area of financial technology and where we're going in future with that.
Sounds good, Matt. Yeah, and if you're listening to this podcast, I encourage you to go to swissinfo.ch where you can sign up for Matt's newsletter, and it is free. Thanks a lot for joining us, Matt.
It's a pleasure.
Speaking of free and every 2 weeks, the Swiss Connection podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, so please do subscribe and tell your friends about us. The Swiss Connection is a Swiss Info production. Our music, both the theme music and the cryptocurrency-themed music you heard this week, is by Michele Andina. And in the mixing booth every week with us is Danny Wehler, our studio technician. Signing off for all of us here, I'm Susan Masika.